Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the man who puts his hand in your face whenever he starts a conversation. I'm also Andrew Warner, the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. We got an ambitious upstart with me here today. You know, I keep saying in hundreds probably of my 1,000+ interviews that the way to start a business is, or the way that I've learned from my interviews to start a business is not to say where's a good idea, but instead to say, where's a person who has a pain and is willing to pay for the solution? Well, today's guest is a Mixergy fan who did that process on me personally a few years ago, and on other people too. And I wanted to invite him here to talk about how he did it so that you can learn from him how to start not just a business, but a new product. Wade Foster is the co-founder of Zapier, a tool that lets your favorite apps work together. We use it here on Mixergy, and I'll give you a couple of examples of what it does for us. As soon as I'm done with this interview, I'm going to go to my contact management software where I have Wade's contact information, and I'm going to say, interview done. Automatically, Zapier is integrated with that software and will email my editor, you know, using my name and all my text and say, hey, Joe, this interview is done. Please edit it. As soon as Joe's done editing the interview, automatically an email, because it's hooked up with Zapier, will email my virtual assistant and say, hey, can you check the audio levels to make sure that it's all right, that it sounds good? And that's the kind of stuff that Zapier does. It works with all our different, all the different software that we use online and makes them all work well together and without me, thankfully. All right, we'll find out how he built this company, how well he's doing with the company, and it's all thanks to Scott Edward Walker. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer. You can find out more about him at walkercorporatelaw.com, but I'll tell you more about him later. First, I've got to welcome Wade. Welcome, buddy.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Do you remember what led you to contact me a few years ago?
Yeah, I was looking for people who needed help connecting tools, and I happened to stumble across a Stack Exchange post where you were asking about PayPal and Highrise integration. It was a few months old. I think it was 8 months old at the time. So I was a bit worried that like it was stale, you wouldn't pay attention. But I kind of talked myself into it. I was like, hey, he's got the problem, or at least he used to. I'll email him and see if it's something he's still struggling with.
You know, it's interesting that you actually admitted and were self-aware enough to know that it was a challenge to contact me, and it's a challenge to contact potential customers in general. Would you talk a little bit about why that's a challenge? Because I've noticed that it is for entrepreneurs in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, for me, it's like nerves around like rejection. I've never been a salesperson. I've gotten better at it. I'm not great, but I still hate being told no. And especially to email someone like you, who is someone I'd looked up to for a long time, and worried that you would come back and say, no, why are you talking to me, Wade? This is a dumb idea. Like, or just say like, I don't have time. I'm not, you know, interested in talking from this to this small guy from Missouri. Like that's like a scary proposition, to just like get told no like that. And so I think that's partly why, we're so afraid to just email people.
And what about the impact of not having a full product when you're talking to a stranger and not having something to give them?
That's pretty terrifying, but it can also be like liberating too a little bit, because you know that you don't have to have it figured out, right? Like I wasn't trying to sell you. At least I didn't feel like I was trying to sell you. I was just trying to figure out like, are you still struggling with this thing? And if you were, like, maybe we could have a conversation. If not, like, that's cool. Like, I mean, you know, there's a lot of other people I can talk to too. So that was kind of the mindset I tried to get myself into.
I remember specifically going to Stack Exchange and going to their web apps forum and saying, here's the issue. I have customers who are paying me via PayPal. They're giving me their mailing address, et cetera. I just want to have it in my address book. So if I ever need to send them like a card like this, I won't have to go hunting for their contact information. It'll be in my address book. And you're right. It was kind of stale. And mm-hmm. I said, that's not an issue anymore. And so what did you do next? I don't even know how you got to the next issue.
So you replied and said, you know, it's not an issue anymore. And then you left the conversation open. You said, are you building something like this? So it was, to me, that was permission to like continue talking to you. So I said, I replied and said, well, sort of, right? Like you can connect PayPal and HiRise, but you can also connect a lot of different stuff. And I actually did a bit of research. So I knew you used AWeber, and I knew you used Wufoo, and I knew you used a handful of other things. So I said, well, I'll take a shot in the dark and say, like, it can also connect, like, these three or four other tools. I said Wufoo, AWeber, and I think I maybe said, like, Dropbox or Google products. I forget, you know. And it connects in all sorts of different ways. And then from there, you replied and said, actually, I do have this problem. I have this contact form on my site, and I need to get, and it's powered by Wufoo, and I need to get those email addresses into AWeber. And so now I knew, like, that's something that we can solve.
And I wanted it done in a specific way. I just wanted to try putting a checkbox on one of my forms that I created using Wufoo so that as soon as someone checks the box that says, yes, I want to join the mailing list, then they get to join the mailing list. And I was going to go to Odesk, and I figured I'd pay maybe $1,000 for someone to do it, or up to $1,000. And you said, yeah, we can do it. And that got me excited. And by the way, the reason that I continued the conversation is, even though that issue was stale on Stack Exchange, even though I'd already moved past it, I felt like it was a huge problem for me, and no one cared, and no one could do anything about it on Stack Exchange. And the fact that you even cared about this issue that was so painful for me that I was willing to put it up on Stack Exchange made me feel like, hey, there's a really smart guy out there who cares about me. This is great. So then, do you remember what you did next?
So there was a couple things next. We actually, I don't know if you even know this. At the time, we didn't have, you asked for the Wufoo to AWeber, and you also asked for the checkbox. We didn't have the checkbox, which I think you knew that we didn't have that. But we also didn't have Wufoo or AWeber supported either. So we really didn't have anything, to be honest. And so as soon as you said, yeah, I'm interested, I emailed Brian and Mike, and I said, who are my technical co-founders, and I said, guys, we need to, like, this is, like, our next priority, because this is the only person we have that's even interested in using our product right now. So, of course, that was the thing we were going to work on. So we added Wufoo, and we added AWeber, and we thought a while about the checkbox thing, because we didn't know if that was actually, like, a feature that people would use, like if it was generic, or if it was just specific to you or not. But ultimately decided, well, we don't have anyone else that's going to use our product, so we might as well add it in there. And so we added that, and I think we did it within 24 hours. We had, like, a prototype, an MVP, like, up and working for it. And I emailed you and said, hey, it works, it's ready, like, you can try it out. I said, you can PayPal me $100 is what I said, was how much it'll cost. And we didn't even have, like, a business PayPal account or anything like that. It was just my own personal PayPal account at the time, because the business had been open for, like, a week grand total. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I was really happy to do it. I remember jumping in and doing it, and frankly then, you didn't give me the tool. You said, hey, let's get on Skype and I'll show you how to use it. And I remember you getting on Skype with me and you said, okay, can you hook up your AWeber account? And I go, all right. AWeber does you linked me over to AWeber. It did some kind of request for confirmation. I said, great. And then you said, do the same thing, I think, for Wufoo. And one of the things that I remember about it was such a clunky process that even my list was called 1, 2, 5, 7, whatever, list of crazy numbers. And I go, how do I know that that's the Mixergy list in AWeber? And you said, that's okay, it doesn't matter. And you know what? It was okay, it didn't matter. I just had this problem. Mm-hmm. I needed to be able to create a form that asked people if they want to join my mailing list. And I didn't like the AWeber form for it. And I figured if it took off, it's going to be great. It'll bring in thousands of people. If it doesn't, then who cares? I'll toss it out. I just need this I need to try it. And I'm not a developer. I can't do it. And yeah. So I was willing to, I would tolerate the whole thing. Anyway, you built it for me and it worked and it was fantastic. And I never needed it really. And so I'm glad that I paid you the $100 instead of paying a developer all kinds of stuff to do on the site.
Yeah.
But it's a great integration, and as I understand it now, people still use it today.
Yeah. I mean, that specific one, Wufoo AWeber, the email or the Wufoo to email form is very popular. So, I was stoked. You know, the funny thing about that call too, you mentioned it was very clunky. It was terrible. Like, you're being kind. It was awful. Like, you couldn't figure out how to even use Zapier. Like, I basically had to tell you where to click.
Yes.
How to do it. And I remember thinking after the call, I was like, oh my God, we have so much work to do. But I was also really excited because you were just, like, ecstatic about it. I was like, I can't believe that he is so excited about this product that is that he can't even use. Like, you could, like, without me talking to you, you could not have used it at that
time. No way. I could not have used it without. And you told me, okay, if you ever need to adjust it, I go, adjust it. I'm going to call him back. But yep. I figured you're getting started, so I can call you back. The big message here for the audience, and you're going to see this throughout the story, is this. If you deal with someone who's got a big issue like I did, a big problem, a real deep need, we'll put up with stuff like that. $100 via PayPal, no freaking problem. You could run away with that. I just need you to, you know, to even try. It's a big help. At that point, and I want to know more about how you found other people's pain, because I'm not the only person who you went through. As a result of that, you raised money. As a result of that, you got users. As a result of this process, not just talking to me, but as a result of the process that we're talking about here in this interview, you were able to get real paying customers and build a real business. Let's go back a little bit and see how you did this all, and so that we can see as it unfolds. This happened because you and Brian had a conversation. Brian became your co-founder because you were doing, you're working for Veterans United doing email marketing.
Yep.
Right? And then how did working there lead to a conversation with Brian that led you to this thought that maybe people want two pieces of software to work together?
Sure. So Brian and I actually knew each other before Veterans United. We actually played music together. So we just were friends before that. And we kind of started at Veterans United at the same time. We worked on a few projects there together. He's a developer. I'm doing a lot of marketing stuff. And one of the things that I had a problem with was we used a bunch of these same sorts of tools. Like, I was trying to figure out how to send triggered emails based on events that were happening in their database, and I was trying to, like, work with the Mandrill API and the Mailgun API, and it wasn't work. I'm not a developer either, so it was hard for me to even, like, understand, like, what I was looking at. And Brian actually had a few, like, side projects that he was working on. He had a tool, he had a little company called BitBuffet that was kind of like a PayPal meets Gumroad sort of tool, and a lot of his customers were, he didn't have many, but a lot of them were asking for integrations with different things, and he was just like, I can't build all this stuff, I don't have time for this. And so he's like, Wade, what if we just made like a thing that connect all these tools? None of these developers have time to build all the integrations between each other, and there's tons of people, like, we just kind of felt like, hey, there's got to be tons of people who are hooking this stuff up. And so we were like, well, yeah, let's go for it. But before I was like, let's go for it, I actually checked. I was like looking at, I remember going to like the HiRise help forum, and I saw a thread about Google Contacts integration that was probably 400 like comments deep for people wanting it. And like 37 singles had commented like, yeah, we're looking into it maybe, but it was like several years old. And so it was just kind of clear, like, it's not really a priority for them. And so I, like, rinse, wash, and repeat. I went to a couple different web apps to see if, like, that same problem existed on their forums. And it did. It was, like, everywhere. I was like, oh, my God. Like, people want integration a lot. And so,
I get that. I remember going into the HiRise forum and saying, I need this issue. And then I'd see how many other people needed it, and I felt really justified. But I also, in my mind, understood that 37 Signals, the company behind that contact management software, they had a philosophy of not adding a lot of features, and it also had gone for a long time that they didn't build it even after they got all these responses. So it wasn't going to happen. Today, of course, they're rebranded as Basecamp is the name of the company behind HiRise. All right, so here's what I see this often. If I understand you right, it's you got an idea, and the idea to you came from a pain that you had. Brian had a similar issue, right? And you both said, okay, this is an issue for us, and then you validated it by going online and seeing, is it an issue for other people? And you saw, oh, yes, it is an issue for other people, and it's not being done. Okay? All right, so now what's next? Was Startup Weekend the next step in the journey?
Yeah, so we went to a Startup Weekend. I wasn't actually planning on, I pitched in my own idea there on it, actually, and wasn't really planning to work with Brian on it. But like, I ended up doing it anyway. We teamed up with Mike, And we built out the prototype that weekend. It was bad too. Like it worked. Like we had our demo on Sunday night. If you're not familiar with Startup Weekend, it's just kind of a weekend hackathon. And on Sunday night, we did it live, and it worked long enough that it looked like it worked, but it totally broke in the background. So people thought it was really cool. We ended up getting like 100 people that were in attendance or that were following the Twitter stream to give us an email address. And so I was like, hey, this has like some momentum. And we decided like, hey, let's bootstrap it. Let's do it as a nights and weekends project for a while and try and make a run of this.
Okay. So it wasn't even built at the end of Startup Weekend. It was just almost a presentation to see if anyone in the audience cared about it. And 100 people said they did. How many people at the Startup Weekend?
There was maybe like total attendees. There was like a little over 100.
Okay. People, but you didn't get 100% conversion rate. It was people from there. And as you said, also online, they were watching. All right. Validation. So, you know, you need it. Brian needs it. You mm-hmm. look online on forums. People say they need it. And when you show this software at an event, people give you their email address and say, I need it badly enough to want an update on it.
Yep.
Okay. The next step was you didn't want to leave it to just an email list on a database. Mm-hmm. You called people.
Yeah, I started emailing those people who were on the list and saying, like, can I talk to you? And I would just ask them, all right, what are the tools that you use in your business? Would it be helpful if they're connected? And that was just like kind of how we figured out like what are the first apps that we're going to build into this tool, right? We had some gut feeling, like we were like, okay, MailChimp is popular, like a lot of people seem to use PayPal, but there's so many tools these days, like we really had no idea, like a really good feel for what was past like the really big companies, like what was going to be useful for folks. So I just talked to them, and I was like, well, if we had a thing, would you guys use this? And, you know, if they said yes, I was like, okay, that's a check mark, and just kind of went through the list for a while until we had, so a little bit of themes. We didn't, you know, it wasn't super scientific. It was just like, okay, there's like, you know, 10 requests for Zendesk. We should probably do something with Zendesk.
I see. So talking to them on the phone further validated it, but also gave you some sense of what programs they wanted to have work together.
Yep.
Got it. And did you get a sense of how they were going to use it too?
Yeah. So like I wanted to know, like, so for instance, you know, the fact that you used, if you use Zendesk and some other random software, like that didn't necessarily mean you needed them to work together just because you had them. So I would ask things like, okay, you have Zendesk and GitHub, how do you want them to work? Like, would that be helpful? And, you know, some would say no, but some would say like, actually it would be really helpful if I could tag a Zendesk ticket and that would create an issue in GitHub. That way my developers don't have to come into Zendesk and be all in the tool, like for the support people. They live and they work in GitHub and the issues just show up in GitHub. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's exactly what we are thinking about doing. So that felt like, all right, just further validation that this is something that's going to work.
All right. Great idea. People are signing up. And today you were in Y Combinator. At that point, you went and applied to Y Combinator. What happened?
We actually got rejected the first time around.
Why?
So we applied right afterwards. I think it was a combination of we had no users at the time. It was still just an email list, and it wasn't that big. We hadn't really proven that we could execute on anything. Like, we were from Missouri. We didn't have like a list of like cool startups that we'd worked on at our names. We didn't have like Harvard or Stanford or anything. Nothing in our past screams like these guys are, you know, really awesome. We just kind of looked like, you know, three guys from Missouri that were just fooling around with tech. And so I think that was why we just hadn't shown really enough progress. And okay. You know, this was in late 2011, and at that time, Y Combinator is like pretty popular, and they're getting really good applicants, and so we just probably just didn't stack up.
So even your application, you weren't even invited to a meeting. Even your application got rejected.
Yeah, we got the standard like default like thanks for applying, keep trying. Like, we mess up all the time. You know, you should work hard and you know, be successful. So we're like, all right, well, we know we can do this. So we just kept working for 9 months, and then we ended up applying to the next batch, and that's when we actually did get in to Y Combinator.
I became your first customer, and then you asked me for referrals.
Yep.
And then I introduced you to Kevin Hale of WooFoo, and you gave me an interesting way to introduce you. Was it Kevin, or maybe it was Chris Campbell?
I think you actually introduced us to Chris.
Okay, because Chris, I forget why Chris was what felt like the right guy, but I introduced you to them, and what happened?
So we actually talked with Chris for a while and got the WooFoo integration. We got listed on their site. They helped us do some marketing. Chris ended up the second time we applied through Y Combinator, helping, like, did a mock interview with us and helped us through the process. So it was just, he ended up just being like a helpful advocate. And then we ended up meeting Kevin through that process. And after Y Combinator, Kevin actually became an early investor in Zapier. And so, like, that, you can see, like, the dots from just, you know, that connection with you just kind of kept reaping dividends for Zapier, even to this day. So, it's just, yeah.
I know the reason that I introduced you to them, it's because you integrated with them. I think I might have even introduced you to someone at AWeber. So there was a reason for doing it. I especially liked WooFoo as a company. They're really good people there. They're smart. They're lean. But I wouldn't have made the introduction except you got code up and running and it worked, you know? So I wasn't making an introduction for a guy who just wasn't there. So I knew that they'd be happy to meet you. You met them. They helped you get in Y Combinator. Why do you think they cared about you? They talk to so many developers. Kevin, I think, now is a partner at Y Combinator, right?
Yep.
So they meet so many great people. Why do you think they cared enough about you to do mock training with you?
Man, I wish – I don't know at that time. I know why they care about us now because, like, the product is so good and so much better. At the time, I think, like – We'd gotten enough customers in a short amount of time. We had gotten WooFoo integrated in well. It worked good enough. Like, their customers clearly liked it. And they, like you said, they were small. They didn't have a huge team. And so it was tough for them to build a lot of integrations. They didn't have that many. And so the fact that we could at least give them something to offer their customers, right? Like, their customers email in and say, do you have an AWeber integration? They just have to say no. Or they have to say, use our API, which for 99% of people, that's not really an option for them. And so at least with Zapier, it gave them an option to say, like, no, not us, but you can check this other company out. And so, like, it was hope that their customers could still find something good.
You know, I wish that more companies use Zapier for that reason, because I ask them for features or integration, and I know they can't handle it. I wish they would just blow me off by saying, we work with Zapier, now go just deal with them, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is too much for them. If I happen to use Pipedrive for my CRM, I don't know the Pipedrive is big enough for every company to integrate with it, right?
Yep.
But I want the integration. And so that's how I use you guys. All right. Let's move on from me.
Okay.
You now have a couple of customers coming in, right?
Yep.
How do you get the next batch of customers?
Yeah, so the next thing we started to think about was how do people search, like, how do they find products like this, right? So we started to think, okay, people aren't going to look for, like, a company that's, like, integration portal or like integration. That's not what they're interested in. Like, what you were interested in when you posted on StackExchange was PayPal and Highrise integration. So we're like, okay, well, if we can create landing pages that are just specific for that service, those two services, that'll be interesting to people. And so we went about building out our service directory, which you can still find today. It's at zapier.com/zapbook. And it was just, at the time, it was a list of maybe like 10 or 20 services. It wasn't very big. Now it's like 300. It's huge. And we would do a couple things to try and drive traffic there. So I would go to the forums. So all these forums where I saw people asking about integration, I would make a comment. And I would try and make a helpful comment. I didn't just say, like, come pay me for my product that I'm building. It's so awesome, right? That didn't feel good. I would say things like, well, here's a way that you could do it. You know, here's a link to, so for instance, like the Highrise Google Context example. I think I left a comment that said, You can use the HiRISE API. Here's a link to the HiRISE docs. Here you could use the Google Contacts API. Here's a link to the Google Contacts API. You can use those to build a product to hook it up together. I'm actually working on a project right now that will try and do this. If that's interesting to you, like, here's a link to it. Just let me know that you're interested. I wasn't trying to, like, be self-serving.
You weren't selling, but you were linking and you were promoting it. Yeah. But the page that you link to, mm-hmm. credit where it's due, the idea came to you from Patrick McKenzie. Patio 11 is his screen name. What did he teach you that allowed you to create these pages?
So Patio has this product called Bingo Card Creator, if you're unfamiliar with it. And Patio doesn't just sell a bingo card creator. Patio sells a Halloween bingo card creator and a Christmas bingo card creator and a math bingo card creator and a U.S. history bingo card creator. He sells, like, every single potential bingo card, that you could think of.
And essentially, it's the same program that he's selling, but he is allowing you to do all this stuff with it.
Exactly. And he has a page for all of those. So if you look for, like, Halloween bingo card creator and search for that in Google, the top thing that shows up is Patio's bingo cards for that. And so we thought, hey, that's exactly what we want to do. Like, we have two services that people want to connect. They want to connect WooFoo and AWeber. And so we'll create a page for that. And, when people search for it, they'll find that specific thing. So rather than just trying to sell, you know, Zapier is the integration hub, which is like Patio's equivalent of Bingo Card Creator. We're like, well, let's give them the very specific thing that they want, which is a specific type of Bingo Card Creator. In our case, a specific type of integration, which is PayPal or HiRISE.
Every one of them. So every one of these apps that work with each other has its own page on your site. You didn't have to sit and manually do it. You created a process that does it. And as a result, today, I just went right now to Google and I typed in AWeber WooFoo, hit enter. And the first result is AWeber and WooFoo integrations. I click the link and I end up on a page that explains that Zapier can do it. And today it's gotten even more sophisticated. It even shows examples of the kinds of integrations that people have done. WooFoo email to AWeber subscribers. So someone fills out a form on WooFoo, you can add them to your AWeber subscriber list. Create AWeber. Oh, it looks like all these people are essentially asking for that thing. Email the list. That's actually the only reason I could imagine that you'd want to use WooFoo to probably AWeber. But that's the idea. And so this allowed you to suddenly get massive coverage in Google for the specific work that you do that otherwise, how would you go and advertise for it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't massive coverage right away. You know, Google doesn't take off right away, but it's been like a very slow and steady, and it just gets bigger over time. It's just, it's cumulative or what compounds. It compounds over time. And so that was just fantastic for us because it gave us like the early traffic that we needed. And it wasn't a ton, but it was enough. Like, we didn't need, you know, we didn't need 10 million people to use Zapier then. We just needed 10 people to use Zapier. You know, that would have been fantastic.
And did it help you? Was this a good way for you to get users?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it still is fantastic way to get users.
I typed in HiRISE WooFoo. I could imagine someone saying, I use WooFoo forms. I want the people who fill out those forms to go into my HiRISE contact manager. I might type in HiRISE WooFoo, boom. The first response is WooFoo's website. And then right underneath WooFoo's site is HiRISE and WooFoo integrations on Zapier. Okay, so that helped you get some more users. You go back and you apply to Y Combinator. Mm-hmm. You guys are not single guys. You're not 19. You have a family. Each of you, right?
Yeah, I'm married. Brian was married. Mike had a long-time girlfriend who is now his fiance. So we're all, we're all in committed relationships.
Is it easy to move over to San Francisco if you're even accepted to move even to, it's not San Francisco, it's Silicon Valley. They want you to live right next to Y Combinator's home base. Was it easy to say to your wives, to your girlfriends, hey, it's time to move?
Not really, truthfully. I talked about it with my wife, like, that this could be a possibility. This was something we wanted. And she was like, she was, you know, at first she was hesitant. She was like, I don't know, like, this is where our family is, this is where our lives are. And eventually she came around to the idea. She was like, okay, I think I could do this. Then the day when we actually get accepted and I tell her that it's happening, like, she was like, you could tell she didn't want that. And it was very, that was challenging. Like, that was a really tough time for us, to be able to make that transition, from Missouri to living in Silicon Valley. Cause she, you know, she left her job and her friends and her family. And I mean, I did too. I left a lot of people that I cared about from Missouri, but I was also going to something else. She was just coming with me, which I like to think she enjoyed that, but it was hard.
By the time you got in, do you have a sense of how many users you had?
Yeah, so at the time that we got in, we had about 1,000 users, but we had a lot more people on an email list. So we did our beta kind of different. If you wanted to use Zapier in our beta, you had to pay us, which most companies don't do that. They give the product away for free in their beta. But we said, you have to pay us. And we moved the number around. Like, it was $100 for you. Some people paid $50. Some people paid $5. Some people paid $200. Like, we just moved it around just because, like, to see what people felt like paying, right?
I did that, too, with the early Mixergy Premium. There's mm-hmm. one guy who still is paying me $5 because that's a deal I made. I said, I'll try it. You want to do $5? He goes, no one likes this. No one thinks it's going to work. All right, I'll pay $5. I'll take a shot on you. And so, of course, I'm happy for him to have now been, I think, a Mixergy Premium member for $5 a month for 5 years now, maybe less.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yes, okay, so you adjusted around. Why didn't you just say, I want to get as many people in there as possible so I can learn from them, get the data from them, get their feedback from them, get them in the pipeline, and then allow them to buy?
So I think this has a lot to do with us being from Missouri. We're in a place where there's not a lot of tech companies. There's not a lot of funding. There's not the bubble or whatever you want to call it out here that's so, like, everyone, like, everything revolves around tech in, you know, Silicon Valley and San Francisco. That just doesn't exist in Missouri. There's good people and there are people doing stuff, but it's not, doesn't even compare in terms of the scale. So we're like, we've got to build a bootstrap company. So that means we need people to pay us. Like, we can't have free users. Like, that's just not going to work. For the type of company that we need to build for where we're at.
I see.
We didn't really know if we were going to do Y Combinator. We didn't know that we were going to move out here at the time. We just thought we're going to build a company. That's really the only thing
I see.
We
and
do.
So if you're not going to get funding from Y Combinator, if you're not going to get big venture capital funding, then you better build a business where people are willing to pay you throughout. I see. And that's what drove it. It wasn't necessarily a better decision long-term for a funded company. It was just a better decision for a company that may not get funding ever. Okay.
Yeah, in
our
stage.
Did you learn, were there any advantages to doing that? I told you about the advantages of not charging. What's the advantage of charging so early?
So it was fantastic because we got all these people who really, really cared. Like, you cared a ton. You got on Skype with us and you, like, put up with a really terrible product and in turn, like, evangelized for us because it solved your problem. I can't imagine people who are free users ever going through the effort to give us that kind of feedback. But we did that I did that with the first probably 200 users that we had. I got on Skype with them. I went through the process with them. I asked them what their problems were. They put, like, and I think it just comes down to they put their credit card in there. They took a chance on us. Product sight unseen. Like, you couldn't even try the product without giving us some money.
Think, Wade, that there's a group of entrepreneurs who love entrepreneurship, not entrepreneurship tools, love business tools. I have friends who come over. I think I might have invited you and your co-founders over to brunch. And Scott, you guys are married and you don't have much time to come over, unfortunately. And I live in San Francisco. You're down a few miles down in Silicon Valley. So we haven't done it. But if you come over, you'll see people get really excited about photo taking apps on their phone, about apps that allow them to find beer. I totally get it. I install it when they're there sometimes. I delete it after they're gone. I have no interest in it. But their excitement is the way I get excited about Trello, which is a business tool for me. The way I get excited about Zapier, which is a business tool for me. The way I get excited about I'm trying to think of the company, I forget their name now, that sends out our packages, the beads that we send out. I get excited about that. And I think that people just don't tap into it. They just don't understand it. And I would have evangelized no matter what, even if we hadn't talked. I just think that I think business tools are exciting, so much more exciting than a photo than a photo app.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, that's I'm much more like you than you know, I don't have my my home screen is the only screen on my phone that has apps on it, and it's got like my email is like the most important app there.
I love Drew Houston. I had him on. I know him. I installed Carousel for photos. I might reinstall it, but I deleted it. What I love is Mailbox. He could charge me $20 a day. I would pay him for Mailbox. Yeah. It's a business tool. Okay. Speaking of, so now I see a way that you got your customers. You were starting to say you added them to a mailing list, and were you promoting to that mailing list saying you have to pay if you want to use it?
No.
What did you do with the mailing list?
This was a big mistake that I made, well, that we made.
Good, open up.
The mailing list just sat there. So a few people, if we were able, it was weird. Like, we overthought it, is what happened. If you came through the landing page and we supported your service, you immediately saw landing pages that let you pay. If we didn't support it, you put your email address in, and it just sat there.
That's how you built your mailing list.
Yep.
These integration pages. Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you built integration pages even for apps that you weren't supporting just to get a sense of how interested people were?
Yeah. So we knew which one, the next ones to build, right? Like, okay, we've got, you know, 50 email addresses for this service and we've only got 20 for that one.
Well, oh, dude, hang on a second. This is very interesting too as a way of building a mailing list. Imagine if, for example, for Mixergy, I went into the Inc. 500 list or the 5,000 list, got all the founders of their companies and created pages on Mixergy, biography of whoever is, enter your email address to get it. And then I said, we don't have it yet, but now that I know you're interested, I will look for him. And if enough people are interested, I'll look for him. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then what you could have done was email them back and said, hey, I know that we don't have a box integration yet, but you should understand that we have all these other integrations. And if you're a business user, which is what box users tend to be, you probably care about our integration with, I don't know, with AWeber or one of the other integrations. But you didn't do that. Why not?
I don't know. Honestly, like I think it came back to the thing we talked about at the very beginning, where about rejection, right? And people saying no to you. Like, I felt like we didn't have what they wanted at that point in time, and that I didn't feel like we could email them for something that they didn't want. Like, I wanted this thing. Why are you going to email me about this thing that I asked you for this? You know, you shouldn't email about at a different thing. Like, and I psyched myself out of it. Like, we totally should have done that, but I just thought, like, they asked for this specific thing. The only time that I can email them is when I have that specific thing. And so we built a mailing list of 10,000 people, and a lot of it probably got wasted by the time we launched because the emails had gone stale.
Ah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
let me do a quick plug, and then I want to ask, whoa, do you hear that, by the way? You have a good headset on.
No, I hear, like, a little bit of fuzz. Is that what you're hearing?
I'm in an office, and someone's making some kind of weird noise. I can't tell what it is. Hey, quick plug here for Scott Edward Walker. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer. I can tell you that all day long. And if you're listening to me, you're probably smart enough to know that I got paid to say that. And you're going to say, well, who cares what Andrew says? He got paid to say it. Well, let me give you a list of other people who are fans of Scott's. Steve Blank on Scott's webpage. You can see a quote directly from him. Scott, smart guy. I like Scott. He's a great lawyer. Mark Suster, the venture capitalist from Upfront Ventures, says, what I like about Scott, he's very transparent about the legal industry. Jason Calacanis, a deep competitor of mine as an interviewer in the startup world, and a good friend. He says Scott's a great lawyer who loves startups. Neil Patel. Scott says Scott is a great lawyer. He is affordable, responds fast, doesn't charge you for 5-minute phone calls, and always gives you great advice. Nick O'Neill, co-founder of Startup Stats, Social Times, all Facebook. He says, Scott is an awesome lawyer. He is affordable, responsive, and is my go-to lawyer for pretty much everything. These are some of many entrepreneurs in the startup space who understand that they don't just want the local lawyer to be their lawyer. What they want is a person who knows his stuff. And that's why they like Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer, go here. Let me give you the URL again. People want me to say it and to speak slowly because I tend to talk fast. I'm a New Yorker, unlike you, Wade. We talk very fast. WalkerCorporateLaw.com. At this point, after you got into Y Combinator, do you have a sense of how many customers you got?
When we got into Y Combinator, we were at around 1,000 that had paid to be in our beta. And then right at the start of Y Combinator, we launched, we opened it up, anyone could sign up. We turned it into a freemium tool so you could start using it for free if you wanted. And that's when we started really trying, like the product was a lot better. You could actually, you could self-serve, use it. You didn't have to talk to me on the phone anymore or anything like that. And that's when we started really starting to build a lot of integrations into the tool.
I'm looking at where your traffic is coming from and I see Y Combinator. And my guess is, actually, do you know why Y Combinator is sending you traffic before I explain why I think it is?
Hacker News?
That's what I think, right? So yep. Hacker News is a good space for you. Then Evernote sends you traffic. Nimble sends you traffic. I'll just read these names and see if the audience gets a sense of what's happening here. Nimble, Asana, Feedly, Trello, Buffer App, Gravity Forms, Xero, MailChimp, Basecamp, Pipedrive, Contactually. Oh, I could just go on and on and on. I've done this. The answer is, these are integration partners. These are sites that you integrate with. And this is something that the founder of SnapEngage told me. Every time he integrates, those sites that he integrates with have a reason to link to him, have a reason to promote him. And as a result, that's a big source of traffic and customers. Is that what happens to you?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Danny, who writes our blog, wrote a fantastic post today, in fact, on this exact process. It's step by step how we do it. And we've learned this over the course of 2 years now. When we, you know, back in the Y Combinator days, we weren't good at it. We weren't great at it. You know, we do okay with the launches and new integration partners, but now we have it down to like a very specific process for what to ask for from our partners and also what to give our partners from our side to make them like us more so that whenever we launch with somebody, it's a good deal on both sides of
the
table.
What do you mean? What do you have to give them that you weren't aware of before, and what do you ask in return so that you can grow your business?
Sure. So we provide them with lots of documentation about just the process of being on Zapier because it's kind of a different integration. Like it's not like doing a Dropbox integration or Evernote. It's like this hub that does a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I'm not sure how it works. Like, why should I do this sort of thing? So we have, like, we send them links that have documentation on every part about Zapier, not just how to integrate with us, but also about what we do to help promote you. You know, we talk about our service directory pages. We talk about our email list. We talk about our blog. We talk about our Twitter feed. We talk about all these things that we're going to do to try and help promote them. And in turn, we also talk about when we launch, here are the things that you need to do that are to help us out. Like, you should email your customers. You should list us on an integrations page. You should help promote the launch on through your social channels. And we tell them that because it works. Like we've said, we've done this now 250, 300 times. Like, we know that this is the stuff that works. And we also give them as much as possible. So, like, we'll write the blog post for them. We'll write the email for them. We'll give them all the assets. Like, we'll just do the work for them to promote it. So all they have to do is copy and paste some stuff in and click send email or publish
post. And do they do it? I ask all my guests to help by promoting my interview. I don't know that they all do it. Do they do it for you?
Not everyone does it.
So what do you do if they don't do it? How do you encourage them to do it?
You know, enough of them do it that we just focus on the people that will do it, that help us out. If they don't help us, you know, we've got 300 partners to keep up with. We're a smart, small team. You know, we've got other folks that we'll spend our time on. That's kind of just, it's just how you have to make choices. So that's what we do.
Okay. I was thinking there might be a way that you guys are encouraging them to do it because you are getting a lot of traffic.
I think over time, like, we create case studies about this stuff and they'll hear from their customers. And we've had people who went kind of like on the fence about Zapier, like they didn't really care for it, to I'll get an email 6 months later from, you know, someone on their team that's like, you know, oh my goodness, Wade, like I didn't know that this is how it worked, or like they didn't understand Zapier for whatever reason, and they they completely do a 180, and they love us now. And I that's fantastic when that happens.
Do they even need to do anything for you to integrate with them? As long as they have it, Zapier comes from API, right? It's Z-A-P-I-R.
Yeah.
Right? Excuse me, Z-A-P-I-E-R.
E-R, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. They don't need to do anything really, do they?
So these days, a lot of them do. They actually do the integration with us because we have a developer platform, zapier.com/developer. You can go there and you can hook into Zapier yourself and do the work. And the reason that they do it is because it's a lot faster if they do it than if we do it. We're 10 people, and we can't build that many integrations. We can build a lot, but we can't build a ton. And so there, it's a lot faster if they can do the process. And so that happens a ton these days. In fact, it started happening. We built the dev platform in August of 2012. And since that time, that's been the majority of the way that integrations have been done on Zapier versus us still having to do all of the integration work. Instead, we can work on features that help everybody out.
Did that happen because of Box?
A little bit, right? So when we launched Zapier, we got an email from Aaron Levy asking, why is Box not on Zapier? And
we're the founder.
Like, well, yeah, I mean, the guy, the crazy magician, he's amazing. He's incredibly smart. And he cared enough about Zapier to want Box on Zapier. And the honest truth that we had for him was we just hadn't gotten to it yet. Like, we just don't have the resources to build out, you know, we can do like one a week maybe, right? And that's if we're really focused on this. And so we're like, how can we scale this out? Like, how can we build, make it so that other people can help contribute to it? And that's when we built the developer platform.
I see. And opened by adding the developer platform, they can integrate without you, and then you get the promotion as a result of it.
Yeah. But it solves a problem for both of us, right? Like, we already had a lot of integrations, right? So now it's valuable for them. You know, we couldn't have done that on day one. You know, they would have said, you connect four tools. Like, why should I do an integration with you?
But so then what's the takeaway from this part for someone who can't build software that integrates with everything? Is it to look for something to integrate with? What else could they do?
Well, I mean, you know, integrate with Zapier, right? Like, that's what solves the problem.
No, I mean, I know that there are people who are listening to us right now who are saying, you know what? I get how if I create a page for everything that we're doing, automated even, every combination, I get how that would help me. I get how if I even build pages for things that are coming up and use them as landing pages to collect email addresses, that could help me both understand my customer better and also give people another way of entering my site. I've learned that from Wade. I've learned calling up customers from Wade. I've learned looking for pain points online from Wade. What I would like to do is integrate one of Wade's best tactics for getting customers into my business, is what they're saying in the audience. How would they be able to do that? Is this something that other companies can do, this integration process?
I think it depends. Like, I think some companies it works really well. I mean, you came up with a great example, right? The idea to, you know, go find the biggest interview people that you'd like to interview and create pages for all of those. And you could spin up, you know, even if you're not technical, you could use a tool like Unbounce or something to make landing pages for all these services or all the potential interviewees and collect email addresses that way. Yeah, so I think if you think about it long enough, if you think about what your customers are really looking for, they're usually not looking for like your new company, you know, .com. They're looking for something else. They're looking
right.
for like.
But that's a search thing. Integrations maybe is not an easy answer for how other companies can use this integration strategy that you that you had to grow their business. All right, fair enough. I don't want to force it. Zapier is a pretty tough thing to explain to people. Right? Yeah. That's why you explain Aweber and Woofoo instead of explaining Zapier and APIs. You still, though, you went out to raise, after Y Combinator, $500,000+. How much did you raise?
A little over $1 million.
A little over $1 million. And these entrepreneurs and investors who put money into your business had to understand the challenge of explaining it. Mm-hmm. How did they help you solve that challenge so that you could explain to entrepreneurs, to business people, here is what Zapier does and you need it?
I still don't have a great answer for you. We still, anytime I talk to a person, the first question I ask them is, What tools do you use in your business? And then that way I can customize the pitch. And that's what we do on our website. What tools do you use on your in your business? Like, we try and get them to the tools as fast as possible instead of trying to explain Zapier as this behemoth that connects everything and does all these different tools. Because at the end of the day, the customer still cares about, they care about WooFoo, and they care about AWeber, and they care about Unbounce, and they care about the tools that they use and getting them to work together. So we still try and get to that before ever talking really about broadly what the vision for Zapier is, because that's not interesting to our customers.
What about if this, then that? It integrates services together. It does it completely for free. What did you do when you, at what point did you find out about them?
We've known about them for a while. I think we were kind of, we kind of came along at the same time as them. They may have been around a few months before us, even, if you look at the history. I honestly didn't, we never really worried about it too much. Kind of a rising tide raises all boats. We serve a business market, and that's who our customer base is. And so
wasn't
that's
there a time when you were upset or worried or nervous? This is your business, and there's someone competing.
I mean, if there's someone, if you're not getting competition in your business, I would think you'd be more worried, because are you actually solving a problem? I mean, maybe there are businesses that are big businesses that have no competition, but I don't know of any. So I think it's just comes with the territory. You just have to, you have people that do similar stuff as you, and you try and build the best product for your customers. And at the end of the day, like, that's what you stand on.
I've sometimes tried to duplicate what you do with if this and that, and I can't, because, for example, we talked about Trello. One of the things that I like about you is, unlike Trello's email to Trello feature that they have, with you, I can say, I want this to-do to go on my Trello board, but not just on my Trello board, but on this list within the Trello board, and I want this person assigned to it, and all this other stuff you guys can do. So I went, and if this, then that doesn't do that. Because they are focused on consumers, you're focused on businesses. Where they don't have that, you don't have what they're good at, which is turn the light pink if I get a tweet, right? Because they're good with tweets, which are with on a consumer basis, and light integration. I mean, really, Philips light integration. What you did worry about, though, is answering customer emails. Why did you go so long doing that yourself, those tech support emails?
I kind of like it. I like doing it, and I just felt like our customers care enough to ask us that.
That seems really nice in the PR answer, but come on. It drives you crazy when a customer says, this doesn't work, and you have to explain to them, I don't run WooFoo. I integrate with WooFoo. I don't run Evernote. If you're having a problem with Evernote, here's where to go contact them. I can't make your Evernote better.
Yeah. I mean, that is a challenge. It is. It's a struggle for us. And we really, we take pride, though, in like trying to help those people out. And we really do. Like, it's not just like a, I don't think it's just like, for us, it's not just a PR tactic. And it's, I mean, it's not just like a thing that we put up on our site that we care about our customers, right? We really do. Like, it hurts me when I have a customer that emails in and is really angry that they can't do something, because I think they should be able to do it. It really hurts me when I know that it's our fault. Like, I know that, like, you know, even if it is kind of Evernote's problem, or if it's WooFoo's problem, even if it is kind of theirs, at the end of the day, our product says that we can connect these two. Like, we say that we can do it, and they took the time an effort to sign up for a product. They took the time and the effort to try and use it. And they took a part of their day, sometimes a part of their week, trying to get it set up. And if it doesn't work, like, that's frustrating. Like, if I was that person, I would be frustrated at us. And so I think when they email in, like, they deserve an answer for us, from us. That's like the very least that we can do to help them out.
Jeremy Weiss, our producer, talked to you before the interview started. And he asked you about different milestones in the growth of your business. And you talked about getting Box to contact you, having integrations as a way of bringing in new business, and so on. One milestone for the growth of your business was hiring a support person finally. Why did that help your business grow?
So that was Micah was the very first person that we hired. Right at the end of Y Combinator, we raised the money. We had a little bit of revenue, not enough to really like do it. So the money helped us hire Micah, basically, is the first thing that we did with it. And I was spending from, I'd get up at about, start working at about 8 o'clock, and I would work until about 3 p.m. So that was 7 hours, and all I was doing that 7 hours was answering customer support tickets. I was just saying, like, just helping them out. And I'd done that, like, it gradually gotten longer, right? It wasn't 8 to 3 at first. It was like 8 to 10, and then it was like 8 to 11, and it was 8 to, and it just kept getting longer and longer. But I learned a lot, too. Like, I knew that, okay, these are the things that the customers care about. These are the things that they're complaining about. We need to build more things here. And so that was helpful. But at a certain point, like, I didn't need to be doing 7 hours of it. And so Micah came in, took over probably 70 to 80% of the support. And that allowed me then to focus on all the stuff that I'd learned about our customers and start executing a lot on that.
What's one of the big things that you did to get new customers once you were free?
So we started really working on more of our content strategy. Like, I started writing a whole lot more. I started doing case studies. We started building out our blog and spending a lot more time on that.
What are you doing? I've heard you say that content marketing has helped you get new business, get you more traffic. I'm on your blog. It's just zapier.com/blog. I don't see what's driving so much traffic here. I don't see many shares. I don't see many comments. I'm on there.
So the Zapier blog gets over 100,000 visits a month now.
Okay.
And the biggest thing that it really does is it gets a lot more people are interested in reading about some business process or some tactic that they can use in their business, whether it's related to Zapier or not. That content is more interesting to a broad audience than sign up for this WooFoo AWeber thing right now. So what it allows us to do is get a lot of just like top of the funnel traffic and kind of brand awareness. We get links directly to our blog, which ends up helping out our service directory in Google. And it brings in a lot of people into our email list who we can eventually funnel into the product. And we kind of learned this from Rand Fishkin has a great post about, and I think I might have even learned this from your interview with Leo Widrich of Buffer, where he talks about don't write for your customers, write for people who influence your customers. And that's kind of what we try and do with our blog.
I remember Toby, I asked him why he bought a sponsorship spot on Mixergy for so long. And I said, my guys know about Shopify. Yes, they know how to create stores even from scratch. Why are you trying to reach them? And he said, they're the influencers. When people need to build a store, they're going to come to your audience and say, what do I do? And if your audience knows about Shopify as a place to send them, then Shopify will do well. I get that.
Yep.
Sometimes I feel like as an interviewer, that's almost like a trick. Like when the guys at SnapEngage gave me an account on SnapEngage to try it out. Then when I interviewed them, I loved the product and I felt I was being too effusive. I'm a little bit, to be honest, a little worried that I'm being that way here because I do love the product so much. But it freaking works. I wish I could do that. I don't know how I could do that. I think anyone out there who can influence anyone has already seen a Mixergy interview.
Yeah, I don't know. We know that we can, like, it's still something that we know that there are so many people in this world that we haven't reached yet.
How do you know what to charge? Now that you charge people and have freemium, how do you know what to charge?
We don't. We know that what we have now works. We make good money off of it, but we know it's not perfect. In fact, we're working really hard, like, on interviewing our customers right now, surveying our customers. We actually hired a data scientist who's helping us crunch the numbers to get better at it. So we know it's not perfect, but right now it's good enough to help us grow the business. It doesn't have to be perfect.
You guys are profitable now.
Yeah, we actually have been for the last 2 months.
For 2 months?
2 months, yeah.
So the business is about a year and a half old when it starts to turn a profit.
Two and a half, actually, now. Yeah.
Two and a half.
Mm-hmm.
How much money are you guys bringing in? What kind of revenue?
We actually don't share revenue numbers, but you can probably take a guess if you look at how many people we employ. And
right. Well, you don't have that many people. I'm on your about page. I was trying to get a sense of how many people were there. We see 9 people on the team.
There's actually 10 now, so we haven't updated it. Well, 11, actually. So we haven't updated in a while, but...
I see. 11 people on the team, but you're not all in the Bay Area.
Nah, it's entirely distributed.
Otherwise, folks. I would say roughly 100,000 per person, but it's less than.
It varies, yeah. I mean, it just varies all based on where... Just skill sets and, yeah.
You know, there's one thing that you weren't even sure you wanted to talk about, but Jeremy's very good. Jeremy's an interviewer in his own right, and he's gotten better and better at getting people to open up. And I want the personal stuff. I don't just want the stats. And one thing that you and he, when you were talking, I could see you know where I'm going with this. You feel comfortable talking about it?
Yeah. I think it's helpful, yeah.
You introduce it. I don't want to ask the question inappropriately.
Oh, sure. So Jeremy asked me, the question he asked is, what went wrong? Like, what didn't work for you at Zapier, which I think is a great question. And truthfully, we've been lucky. Like, we've gotten, we try and make small steps so we don't make big mistakes. And we've gotten lucky so that we've made good progress and haven't had any major screw-ups. But that doesn't mean things haven't been hard. You know, I talked about moving out here with my wife. Probably the hardest thing, though, was in October of 2012, I got a call from my mom back home in Missouri. Saying that my dad had a heart attack and passed away. And that, I mean, that sucked. Like, he was only 62. So, I mean, it just kind of, like, shook my world. My dad was the guy that, you know, he's the guy that plays catch with you and teaches you everything. So, and the reason I thought it'd be helpful to share is afterwards, I actually got hooked up with another entrepreneur who had the exact same thing happen to him 6 months before. And he ended up actually selling his business because of this, the exact same issue. And I got introduced to him, and I met him, and we just went out for drinks. We went out for coffee. It was just helpful. It was really helpful to have someone to talk to where there was no, like, pretense or anything like that. And I think that's really important for, like, people to understand that it's okay as an entrepreneur to not have it all together, things are going to go wrong, and not just with your business, but in your personal life. And you can still do well and thrive even with when things kind of suck.
I always worry if my dad dies, who's going to take care of my mom? I don't mean financially, I mean emotionally. You just feel like she's now all alone.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about that for a long time. Like, that was part of the issue. Is my sister lived in, I had one sister who lives in Thailand, and I had one that lived in Springfield, which is like 2 hours from my hometown. And I thought about it. I was like, man, should I move back home? Like, should I? Like, I feel like I should, but my mom's young. And I felt like I ultimately decided, like, that would be doing a disservice to her. Like, she still has a lot more life left. And, you know, and she would feel bad about it too, I know. So, you know, you kind of you take the grieving time and you go on with your life. You don't forget, but you try and do the best and live in their memory, I guess.
I think I know the founder you're talking about. I remember in the interview asking why he sold, and he didn't. He said, I'm just never going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. And then I found out and I understood because of his dad. And it's so interesting that the decisions here do depend sometimes on an emotional, personal reason.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. His world was shaken. There was no reason for him to sell otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't wish it upon anybody.
Do you talk openly with people about, was it comfortable to talk openly with him about how you felt about your dad?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it was eventually, you know, He was just a good guy. Like, he said, like, you know, you want to talk about it? We don't have to. Like, we can just talk about whatever.
How did he know to have this conversation with you?
I was introduced through an investor, actually. And he's not even an investor in Zapier. He just was, I just said, like, hey, I can't meet with you. Like, I had, like, I think the autoresponder came in or whatever, and he's like, sorry to hear, like, if you need someone to talk to, this guy in my portfolio just had the same issue, like, I'll make an introduction. I said, that'd be nice, and so.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. people have been really supportive of you.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do it on your own. And yeah, that's the truth.
And you have good co-founders. If you were on a lifeboat and had to toss out either Mike or Brian, it's like it could only hold two people. Who would you toss?
I would toss myself, probably.
All right.
It's a cop-out.
Brian and Mike
answer,
get to continue.
Yeah, I mean, they're the guys that can build the thing, you know, and the product's got to work, you know, so.
Do you ever feel helpless because they could build it in the early days? You feel helpless because they could build it?
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, I did the best I could to, like, help out. You know, I tried to, do as much, like, marketing, try and get new customers, try and get stuff in, people in the door, build the list. But, you know, it's tough. Like, if the product can't do X yet, like, it's tough to bring in a ton of good, like, users. So you spend a lot of time, like, just trying to be as helpful as possible. So I would just do whatever it took to make sure they didn't have to do anything that wasn't, like, helping build the product.
All right, you wouldn't give me the revenue, but here's what we do have. You hit 100,000 users in October 2013 after 2 years of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
The next 100,000 only took 6 months.
Yep.
There's no virality in it, though, other than people talking about it. It's not like Skype. When I installed Skype for the first time, I had to teach a friend how to install Skype and use it because otherwise I'd be talking to myself. There isn't the same thing going on with your product. What happens that allows you to grow faster and speed up?
I think marketing is cumulative. So you spend a lot of time, you know, every time we do a launch post, that's more people that can use Zapier. Every time we integrate with a new service, that's more people that can use Zapier and find out about us. Every time, you know, if we write a post, like, that's more traffic that gets indexed by Google, or, like, another thing that gets indexed by Google and sends some traffic over time. And all that is just cumulative. And we just try and make sure that just keeps going up. And so, you know, if we got 100 leads last week, we're going to get 110 this week. And then we're going to try and get 121 the next week. You know, we're just going to try and keep growing it more and faster with the team that we've got. It's kind of cliche, but, like, you know, you just, the process is what works.
You know, meanwhile, I'm taking a look at your search to the extent that I can today to see where your traffic is coming from. We're talking about all these integration partners and how they keep helping you grow. Mm-hmm. Zapier is the keyword that sends you by far the most traffic. Number two, Zapier with two P's, the type home. Number three, Zapier pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And only after that do we get to Trello, GitHub, then mm-hmm. Evernote SMS reminder, then Google Disk Calendar, then mm-hmm. Trello integrations, then Trello Google Calendar. And all of them together amount to roughly half the searches, and the other half comes from Zapier as a keyword. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it was like in the early days.
No, not at all. I mean, now we've built up a bit of a brand and people know us. Like, you've talked about, you know, I don't work with software that doesn't hook in with Zapier. Like, you're not the only person that feels that way.
What do I do, by the way? I forget. It's going to kill me that I can't think of the name of the company that I use to fulfill my beads. I interviewed the guy. I've had him over to my house for dinner. He's a great guy. I'm going to kick myself later for not remembering the name. But I would like to pay someone to make that work with Zapier. He will not do it. I will give him money if he does it. If I needed to hire a developer to do this, to integrate his company. Because I'll tell you what happens now. This is the most goofy thing. I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but here's what happens. Somebody fills out a form to get the beads. An email goes from my form to a virtual assistant that says, here's the address. Could you please send this person a bead? So that email has all the contact information. She then has to go to his site and type in or copy paste all the address in, hit submit so that we could get it. There's only one benefit to that we have a pair of eyes making sure that no one's screwing around and getting beads for free, God forbid. But I need integration. If I wanted to hire someone to do that, can I just go to Odesk and say, make it work?
You know, if you tell me who this is, if you make the introduction, we will make this happen, because we have this problem too with sending out t-shirts. Like, we have to, like, dude, like, type it in ourselves too. And I want to know, like, there's no one that has an API that lets us do this. So if you find it,
he does have an API. And that's his answer to me. He says, I have an API. Oh, I know what I do. I do a search on my site for Zapier because I told him I should probably do Zapier with three Z's. Site Mixergy. He's great. He even came over for Scotch. He was a great guy. Zapier. Let me do a search. But I talked about you guys a few times. Nope, it doesn't come. Oh, Zapier with two P's. Someone in the audience right now is kicking themselves. It's not working. All right, I'll have to come up with it later. You know what? Sometimes when you just try to think too much about it, it won't happen. It was Ben from Olark who told me about them. All right. I will say this. Anyone who's watching who wants to learn more, look, there are a lot of people in the audience who say, I'm done learning. I need to go do. Like, you have to do one or the other. No, you keep looking for good ideas, and then you keep implementing them. One of the things you've seen in this interview over and over is how Wade and how the team at Zapier keeps doing that. They see what works for Patio 11, for Patrick McKenzie to create all these pages. They say, let's try it for ourselves. They see that talking to customers works for companies like Hismetrics. They do it themselves. Anyway, the point is, if you want to learn from great entrepreneurs too, who teach you every part of this process, how to do traffic. Patrick is one of the guys who came to talk about that, how to get traffic, how to talk to customers, how to figure out which customers to talk to, what to say to them, and so on. It's all available for you at MixergyPremium.com. Go sign up and learn. MixergyPremium.com. I guarantee you'll love it. Of course you're going to get your money back, but frankly, if you're not happy with it, hit reply and tell me why not, and I'll make it right for you, because I want to learn why you're not happy with it. MixergyPremium.com. Hey, Wade, I did a 1,000th interview with Jessica from Y Combinator. She was so good. She posted that interview, my 1,000th on Mixergy, on Hacker News, which just meant so much to me. You came in the comments. Do you remember what you said?
I don't remember exactly what I said, but I think I said something like, I really am excited for you because, one, I've watched tons of your interviews in the past. That's what, when I was in Missouri, I didn't have access to some, like, people in tech. I had a few people, but not nearly like what your network was. And I learned a lot of the things that we tried from watching Mixergy interviews. So, like, when we got the idea for how to do, to use patio stuff, that was from a Mixergy interview. When we learned about customer development, that was from, like, a Mixergy interview, maybe with, like, Heaton Shaw or Eric Reese or someone. Like, all this stuff we learned, I learned from just watching Mixergy interviews and a lot of other things. And so I was just really, really excited for you when you got the 1,000th interview, because that is, this is just a huge body of work and a testament to how good, because to do things for 1,000 interviews, like, you have to be pretty good. So.
Thank you. And yep. I guess it wasn't there. That is what you said there. And then you followed up with the tweet where you said, Andrew talks about the circle of Mixergy, where you watch, you do, and you come back and teach through an interview. And you said, I'm testament to that. I've watched, I've learned, I've used, I'm coming back to teach. And you've completed the circle, and I'm so proud to have you on here. I'm so proud that I'm your first customer. I could talk to people about it all the time. Frankly, if I wasn't your first customer, if we weren't at all friends or knew each other, and frankly, we're not that close friends because you're married and I'm living far away from you.
Yeah.
But I respect the hell out of the work that you've done. Even if you hated me, even if you posted on Hacker News, this guy is a hack. We should not be watching him anymore as entrepreneurs. I would still love your product. And what I'm saying is, thanks for being out there, though, listening to the interview and coming back here and teaching. Right now, there's someone out there, maybe in Missouri, maybe, frankly, outside of the country, in a place where there isn't a tech community, in a place where maybe in a country where there's hostility to entrepreneurship. And they don't have these kinds of conversations that we have here. They don't have the kind of mentors that we have here. And they're listening to Mixergy and they just learned from Wade. That person, I hope, will go out there and use what they've learned and then build a company and come back here and say, I learned from Wade all that time ago. And as a result, I built this company and I'm here to pay it forward. So such an honor to see you do this, Wade, and such an honor to hear and to know that you out there are somewhere listening and one day you'll be here. Thank you, Wade. Thank you all for being a part of this. Bye, guys.